There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Real time.
And much as I always look forward to this segment on the show each and every week, I'm particularly looking forward to this one as, of course, the big hype in town yesterday was Star Wars, The Last Jedi, the red carpet was out at Diff, and William Mullally, our film critic,
no, what was his chief? Chief film critic, wasn't it?
Chief executive.
Executive. Chief executive film critic. I don't know. I get vibes from William when he comes in, and I'm not getting positive ones. And I know you went to see it as well, Shruti. First of all, very quickly, what did you think of it?
I loved it. I liked it way better than The Force Awakens. I mean, I liked The Force Awakens, but I thought the Rogue One was a better one out of, like, if I had to pick it. But I really enjoyed last night, and I'd watch it again.
William Mullally.
Well, I did rewatch The Force Awakens last night before I went. And when I originally saw The Force Awakens, I didn't like it at all. I had so many different problems with it. I didn't care about one of the characters. I didn't care about any of the big emotional beats. These huge moments, you know, characters we've loved for 40 years die, and I couldn't have cared less. And I watched it again, and I was wrong. It's actually one of the worst movies I've ever seen, not just a bad movie. Like, The Force Awakens is a travesty. It should be erased from all time. So going into this, you have to overcome me actively disliking every character in this movie, actively disliking this entire series, almost kind of rooting for it to fail at this point. But there's one small hope. Other than Obi-Wan Kenobi, we have Rian Johnson taking this on, the director, who did, as we've said before, Brick, Looper, fantastic guy. And... you know what? I actually really liked it.
Yay!
I did.
I really liked it.
I'm going to go back to not liking it by episode 9. Yeah. Because J.J. Abrams is coming back, and he's going to bring back everything I didn't like about the episode 7. But for this one, at least, I do think it's a surprising movie. It goes places that you wouldn't expect it to. It's paced in a way you wouldn't expect it to. It's actually a lot more contained than you'd expect it to be. It starts off with one sort of... I mean, we've seen Star Wars movies before.
Yeah.
There'll be a set piece on this planet and this planet and this planet. And although we do venture all over the galaxy, there are really small problems that we're dealing with. You know, their ship is being chased by not the Empire.
The First Order.
The First Order's fleet. And not the rebels, but the resistance are running away from them. And they're running out of fuel because they're having a way to track them, and they need to find a way to get away from them. Mm-hmm. That's really the central conceit here. So it's very, very contained. Meanwhile, Han Solo is not around in this one, spoiler alert. Luke Skywalker is off on the Jedi Island on this mysterious planet with Rey, training and not wanting to be a Jedi anymore, wanting the Jedi Order to end. And again, we stay there with him on the island the entire film. So it's very contained, very character-driven. But every single one of these characters made me care about them. I cared about every moment that was happening to them. There's some very emotional moments here, and they hit me really, really hard. And they surprised me in ways that I didn't expect them to. And I need to see it again because I can't believe my eyes that I enjoyed this movie as much as I did.
Wow, wow, wow. Let's have a listen in to the trailer then of Star Wars The Last Jedi.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, truly special.
Something inside me has always been there. But now it's awake. And I need help.
I've seen this raw strength only once before. Didn't scare me enough then. It does now.
Let the past die. Kill it. If you have to. That's the only way to become what you were meant to be.
So there's the trailer. I'm sure it's going to be filling cinemas this weekend. Truth is actually applauding the trailer, and you've actually seen the film as well.
I have, and I've got my Star Wars jumper on as well.
Yeah, I know. May the Force be with you, is what it says. The Force was definitely with William. He loved it by the sounds of it. And the director, this is a change of direction for him completely, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think with Rian Johnson, I knew from Brick in 2005 that this is a guy who loved film. Brick is, you know, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's very much it's set in a high school, but it's an ode to film noir. And so this is a guy who loves films and pours over them, and not in a way where it's just sort of seeping nostalgia, trying to get the look right, as J.J. Abrams does. I don't think J.J. Abrams has a deeper thought than that in his mind. Hopefully when I interview him, he hasn't heard this. but I think Rian just really has, I think he has the right kind of love for this series, because the reason the series, I think, has gone in a bad direction is that people are just loving it for nostalgia's sake, wanting to relive their own memories, and they're too scared to really move it forward and take chances with it and take risks.
Yeah.
But I think he was willing to take risks and to give his audience a bit more credit than other films have. So I think with this experience, he's really succeeded in that.
Well, here he is, Rian Johnson, talking about what he wants audiences to feel after they've seen the movie.
I wanted to make just a great Star Wars movie. That's it. And to me, that means 10-year-old me would come out of the theater and want to run into his backyard, grab a spaceship toy, and start flying it around. You know, that's like, I don't know. That was really our only goal with this, is let's make something that the audience walks out feeling like they've had a full meal in terms of a full movie and is jazzed about having an adventure.
So that comparison, a full meal, did you feel like you'd ate a full meal when you saw that movie at William?
Well, it was 3 a.m. by the time I got out of there. So really, I just felt like I dreamt the entire thing. So it was a nice midnight snack, I guess, at that point. But it was really satisfying in a lot of different ways. It's a big set. It's a big spectacle. So I think if you just want to see this visually, it's gorgeous to look at. Go see it. I saw it on IMAX. Go see it on IMAX. Go see it on IMAX Laser. Again, there's only like 15 of those in the world, and one of them's at Vox MOE. So go see this on the biggest screen possible.
So if you had to rate it in your, you know, your universal weird comparison rate, what would you rate it?
I give it a full Snoke.
Full Snoke.
Full Snoke.
And it's not often we get William saying that, is it?
Real Time.
Once again, William Mullally joins us to talk movies right here on Real Time. And a couple of questions come in, William, for you. One of them from Brian D'Souza. He says, is the new movie, we're talking Star Wars here, as breathtaking, you know, to someone who hasn't really followed the franchise from the start?
I think the visuals in this film are absolutely breathtaking. I think you could be anyone walking off the street and see that. I do think that they make the characters engaging enough, so much so that as I didn't like them in the first one, I did like them here. So I do feel this movie does enough work to be able to get anyone to care about what's going on. It is a very self-contained story. I think you should have an idea of who Luke Skywalker is, what's Star Wars, what's the Force, these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But if you've read the Wikipedia, I do think you'll enjoy it. And if you do go see it without having seen any other Star Wars, please text in next week, because I want to know for sure if this did work. But my gut says it will.
And Kazombi says, I respect William's opinion on most movies. I would like to know what you thought of the Justice League movie.
I thought it was embarrassing in a lot of ways that they put that movie out when it wasn't ready. And I think it just made me feel like I'd never wanted to watch another superhero movie again in my life. Like, oh, it was, yeah, harsh. It just made the whole thing seem very forced. And even though as much as I really liked Ezra Miller, and I do think that some of these, you know, Aquaman, I think will be really good once it comes out, this... it was a miss. It was a miss, for sure.
So the Force wasn't with you on that one?
No, it was not.
No. All right, so wrapping up Star Wars this weekend, should we all be flocking to cinemas to see it?
Yeah, on IMAX, while it's still in IMAX, because you will regret it if you miss this experience.
All right.
Now, moving on from Star Wars, there are some people who are not big fans. I know you were surprised when I said that to you, but I do know some people. We're going to go talk about Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah, I think there are probably fewer fans of movies that are truly disturbing. So if Star Wars is a tough sell, I think Killing of a Sacred Deer will be even tougher. It's the kind of movie that there's been a number of movies this year. The Square, which was just at the film festival. Mother, the Darren Aronofsky film with Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem. And Killing of a Sacred Deer as well, that are really hard to recommend as much as I enjoy them. Just because I don't know what kind of person I should put through that sort of experience. I mean, we should talk about why that is with killing of a sacred deer.
Yeah.
It's based on a Greek myth. And you know how in Greek myths, someone might just walk up to you and be like, I curse you. And then they're cursed. Curses are real. Yeah. That's the entire... There doesn't need to be a scientific explanation. There doesn't need to be, you know, a magic wizard who's waving a wand. It's just, that's how it is. And that's how it is in this film. There's a boy whose father died on the operating table, and he blames the surgeon. And although he tries to make friends with the surgeon and make him maybe his surrogate father, when that doesn't work, he just curses his family to die, unless he chooses one of them to die by his hand. That is the film. Very grisly.
It sounds it, doesn't it? Now, the director, Yorgos Lanthimos, here he is talking about where the idea for the film came from.
It's always a process. You think about things and situations, and you observe things, and then you try and come up with a story that kind of explores those kind of things. And I work very closely with Efthymis Philippou, my co-writer, that we've written most of my films together, so... It's always a dialogue between the two of us. One of us thinks of something, and then the other one adds to it, and then the other one might come up with a fragment of a story and a character, and then it builds from there. So I never know exactly where it started from.
That's the director then, Yorgos Lanthimos, a new name on me.
Not a big fan of The Lobster, I guess.
No, maybe not.
But it's got a great star cast. I mean, it's got Colin Farrell. It's got Nicole Kidman. It's, you know, Alicia Silverstone coming back. It's a lot happening there.
It's pretty stacked. I mean, Colin Farrell and he, Yorgos Lanthimos, worked together previously on The Lobster. So I do think they have a good working relationship. With Colin Farrell, if we look at his career, we've always thought of him as a movie star. But there's very few times that he's actually... really done something successful on the big screen. And a lot of times when he's at his best is when he's using his natural accent, like in Bruges, for example.
Yeah,
tremendous fun. A lot of times when you put him in an American accent, all of the, I guess, charisma that he has, all of the personality he has are sapped out, and he feels like the most boring man in the entire universe.
You know what you're saying, he's not good on voices. On accents.
He just loses his personality once he loses his own accent. I don't know, yeah. he can do the other accents, but he loses himself.
Okay.
And here I think that he leans into that. That effect is used to this film's benefit. The conversations in this film are completely dry. You know, it's people talking about the weather, basically. You know, how is your day? And this is the sort of dialogue we have in the computer. Oh, I'm thinking of making this for dinner. Oh, that sounds delicious. That's the sort of conversation that they have in this film. The thing that this film does expertly is, even though the dialogue itself is incredibly boring, you know that they're talking that sort of stuff because they're avoiding what's really going on. You know, this is a guy who's got a very much a dark side, who had a substance abuse problem, who has killed people on the operating table due to negligence, and really is living with that guilt. And he covers that up by just talking about the weather and pretending everything's fine. So as boring as this gets, it always has an air of mystery, an air of darkness, and that makes you tense the entire time, which is fantastic.
Here's Colin Farrell talking about the awkwardness in this film.
It's so well designed, and the dialogue is so meticulously thought out, I feel, between Yorgos and Efthymis, his co-writer, that from early on, it's not a particular thing you can point to, but the interaction between myself and Barry's character, Martin, is just a little bit awkward. It's just a little bit left or right of center. But yet, there's a friendship there, and there's a sense of camaraderie, and there's kind of a father-son almost relationship. I was slightly just a little bit, not quite sure what this relationship is, but it seems father and son. I wonder, was there something homoerotic to it? I wasn't quite sure. And then as the story went on, I realized it wasn't homoerotic. It was kind of father and son, but that didn't give me the sense of ease I thought it may have, knowing that one of the characters was married. And then I met his family. And point is, everything on the surface seems perfect. There seems to be a generosity extended from the man to the teenage boy. The surgeon that I played, his life seems perfect. It's an American ideal. It's an American dream. It's the urban American pastoral. And then bit by bit, as we find out exactly the intention that the teenage character played by Barry has in regard to my life and the life of my family, then the film takes a very swift turn towards the more macabre.
Right, so that's Colin Farrell. Awkwardness in the movie. Would you say that's a good description, then?
Absolutely.
Do you feel awkward when
you feel uncomfortable, but because you know something else is going on?
But it's not a jumpy movie, right? Like, I wouldn't get scared watching it.
No, for sure. But when the central I mean, it's a curse that's creating a Sophie's Choice where he has to kill one in order to save his entire family. That's going to get you pretty messed up inside watching. So while you may not be jumping, you're going to go home with a very quiet car.
Thinking who would be the one you could kill if you had that choice.
I'm thinking I could have gone to see Star Wars instead. As Justin has texted in, I'm on my way for Star Wars. Thanks, William, for the review.
Yeah, I really hope you enjoy it. I think you will. If you don't, let's talk about it next week. And if you liked The Force Awakens too, please text in as well, and let's fight about that.
We're going to come back with more movies on Real Time and talk about one of my favorite comedy actors, Ben Stiller, but I don't think in a comedy role in this film.
Real Time.
With William Mullally, our resident executive film critic, who's with
Chief
us.
Chief.
We've talked Star Wars, we've talked the Colin Farrell movie, Killing of a Sacred Deer, but Ben Stiller's back on our screens this week.
I think he's had a subtly good year, Ben Stiller. He hasn't done any of his, you know, big Night at the Museum, Meet the Parents type of films, but he did a film that popped up on Netflix a couple months ago called The Meyerowitz Stories, new and selected, with Adam Sandler, which was really fantastic. Dustin Hoffman as well, who hasn't had the best of 2017. But it was really a touching film. I really like when he goes a bit more on the serious side without going too far on the serious side, when he has these sort of quirky characters. And with a Mike White film like this film that's out called Brad Status, I do think it's a return to that sort of milieu.
So what's the plot like?
So here we have... it's a relatable story, I guess we can say, of a guy who looks on his social media and sees that everyone he knows has become rich and famous and is doing more interesting things than he is. And so he's reassessing his life while also showing his son different universities on the East Coast of the U.S.
I know the feeling, Ben Stiller in this movie. Let's have a listen to the trailer.
Troy!
You have 10 minutes.
I just gotta put on my clothes.
You have, like, the body of a man now.
Hey, Dad, can you not be weird?
Okay.
Can you close my door?
Yeah.
Can you close the door?
Yeah. You're going off to find your college. It's not this special.
We're fully booked tonight.
How about that one?
It's not available.
Oh, looks like it's available.
Yeah, it's not.
At night, my mind drifted back to college. So many friends have become successful. Craig Fisher worked for the White House. Jason Hatfield had his own hedge fund. Billy Wurstler sold his tech company at 40. What do I have? I work for a nonprofit and nothing to show for it.
Somebody asked about you. You know, whatever happened to you.
Where's Brad? I remember that guy, Brad.
Be happy.
Love
be
you.
Present.
All right.
I love you.
These are competitive schools, Troy. Just try not to put too much pressure on yourself.
My counselor thinks so. I'll get into pretty much everywhere I apply.
The kid's going to Harvard.
They'll jinx me, dude.
My son is a very talented musician. Also composes his own music, so.
Wonderful.
I'm pretty sure Harvard is going to be in the running.
Oh, you think Harvard's got a chance?
Suddenly my thoughts darkened. Troy could easily end up struggling like me.
This is Harvard. Even geniuses get rejected. We need to do everything we can.
Dan, I'm about to go at my interview. Do you really need to be jumping all over me right now? You're nuts.
I like the soundtrack.
Yeah, a little LCD sound system.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I don't know. I think this movie could turn out to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, Mike White, I think he had a lot of success as a writer in the early 2000s. He did School of Rock.
Great. Ooh. Awesome. Yeah.
He did Nacho Libre. This year, I don't think he's had the best year. He co-wrote the Emoji Movie. Troy got a good paycheck for that. Probably a lot of free emojis, too. But let's hope it's a return to form here with Brad Status.
Let's have a listen to Ben Stiller then on why he was attracted to this script.
To me, what I liked about the script when I read it and Mike White as a filmmaker is that he brings a lot of emotion that is very real and not always so pretty and perfect, but very human. And yet finds a way through that that's very poetic, I think, in the way he tells the story. He really is very honest about that. And he's, you know, in a way, Mike's funny because he's a dichotomy. He's like a slightly cynical about life, which I am too. But then on the other hand, he's also very, very open-hearted and hopeful about things too. And I think that's an interesting sort of combination.
So Ben Stiller then on why he was attracted to this script. Should we be going and spending our 30-odd dirhams on this?
Out of the three movies that we've spoken about, this is the only one I haven't seen. Mm. And since I've seen the other two, I will be pushing you in that direction. Although, yeah, don't blame me if you go see Killing of a Sacred Deer and walk home and cry.
So it's definitely Star Wars then to go along and see. It's been a busy week for you, William. Of course, the Dubai International Film Festival wrapped up yesterday. Kind of looking back, what were some of your highlights?
I think it was wonderful to have Patrick Stewart here. I had some tremendous interviews. Rob Reiner, meeting him was absolutely wonderful, and talking about Stand By Me, looking back, oh, fantastic. And definitely, I think the number one thing for me was having HBO and OSN bring Michelle McLaren on stage and be able to talk to her about directing Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones and The Deuce and The Leftovers, Better Call Saul. She's just a tremendous person. I think we're friends now. I think we might be hanging out at some point, but she's really, really cool.
Are you following each other on Twitter and Facebook and all of that now?
No, we're beyond that.
Oh, I was going to say not really friends then.
And have you got a favorite film that you saw at the festival this year?
I think it was The Square. I think that was the best one I saw. Maybe The Disaster Artist, because I enjoyed it the most, but I think I'll be thinking about The Square for a long, long time to come.
Mm-hmm. And Golden Globes, of course. Quite a lot of films have been nominated that were showing at the festival.
Yeah, and I'm really excited that Christopher Plummer was nominated for All the Money in the World after replacing Kevin Spacey and doing that within like 2 weeks' notice. He was nominated for that. And I'm flying to L.A. on Saturday to go talk to him about it, as well as Mark Wahlberg and Ridley Scott, who was also nominated for Best Director at the Golden Globes.
So who are you going talking to?
Ridley Scott, director, who's nominated for the Golden Globe this year. Christopher Plummer, also nominated for the Golden Globe this year. Mark Wahlberg, who's just winning Mark Wahlberg's award for being the best Mark Wahlberg. And Michelle Williams, perennial Oscar nominee.
I think William should get a Golden Globe for all that, don't you?
Yeah, and for remembering everything as well.
Yeah. William, so great to have you with us. We'll catch up with you again next week to talk more movies on Real Time.
After Los Angeles, see you then.
Real Time.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.